thank you for joining us. My name is Michael, and you're listening to Warning Shots on CKW 95.9 FM, Campus and Community Radio. Joining us by phone from Bogor, Indonesia, is Kevin Friedman. He is a good friend of CKW. He's also... are you there, Kevin?
Yes, I'm here, Michael. Thank you.
Okay, great stuff. Thanks for joining us. I know it's really, really late your time, so I appreciate that you're joining us live. How are things out there? As you, you've just been there about a week or two. Am I correct?
Yeah, I've been, well, almost a month. I've been in the country.
Okay,
right now.
Okay, great. So yeah, I just wanted to maybe touch base with you a little bit. There was a big story circulating recently about people who in the Indonesian city of Aceh have being forced into re-education programs for wearing punk hairstyles, and this seems to be causing a major cause for concern. The sense that I get is that this is related to this being a very devoutly Muslim center. Could you maybe fill us in a little bit about you know, some of the realities behind that from your end, and how people are responding to it?
Yeah, the area particularly affected by this is a province called Aceh. The city in particular is called Banda Aceh. And the situation going on there at the moment, this particular situation, there was a punk concert, a punk music concert that was supposed to be a fundraiser for people affected by poverty and by hunger. And the authorities came in and they rounded up, as per my understanding, 59 young men between the ages of about 14 or 15 and up until their 30s, and 5 young women who all wore clothing and had hairstyles that were related to the punk movement. So people who had hairstyles that were like mohawks or dyed hair, and because of this, because it's a very conservative culture in this region, they rounded up these people and brought them to an area and gave them, or are currently giving them, what they're calling re-education training. They've shaved many of their heads to get rid of the mohawks or get rid of the dyed hair, and they have also, they're undergoing a process of sort of cultural indoctrination, is what I would call it, as far as my understanding is, to bring them out of sort of the punk styling that they've been accustomed to.
I suppose this the culture of Indonesia, it encourages, or certainly within these Muslim centers, encourages a certain degree of conformity, and it seems to me that punk, or at least the hairstyles are being exemplified, is very much promoting an anti-conformist mentality. Is that sort of like they're trying to stop any, you know, put some sort of blockage on political dissent, or is this just some cranky conservatism, religious? So I'm getting a lot of...
I would agree with that sentiment to a point. However, I should certainly clarify that this is one region of Indonesia, and this is not shared by other regions of Indonesia. Other people I have spoken to are actually quite embarrassed by this. Indonesia, while it is the largest Muslim country in the world, is a very progressive country. It's a very secular country. There are very many people who are very devoutly practicing Muslims. However, they do not want stuff like this in their society. They want people to be able to live freely, people to be able to practice whichever religion they want and act out in whatever way that they would want. However, this region, this province of Aceh, has long been the most conservative province within the country of Indonesia. It's also the region that was most hardly hit by the Boxing Day tsunami in 2004. But it's not representative of the rest of Indonesia. But I would agree that it is quashing certainly people who are maybe not as conservative as the authorities in this region. And I would think that it is a little bit of political movement as well.
Okay. Well, maybe you tell us a little bit about the politics and the economic situation within the country currently. What are some of the major what kind of upheaval is appearing on the forefront? Like as the rest of so, Kevin, I'm sorry, I'm hearing a lot of interference from your end. I don't know if that's related to the phone lines or what, but you're hearing me okay.
I'm close to a busy road, and then there's quite a few quite a little bit of traffic going around.
Okay, well, it sounds better now. Yeah, could you tell us a little bit about some of the maybe major political and economic developments happening there that this you know punk re-education story may be potentially distracting the rest of the world from?
Well, there's a number of things going on in the country. Indonesia has for a long time been in sort of political and economic upheaval. It was ruled by a military dictatorship until the late 1990s, when the Asian financial crisis hit and it forced the dictatorship out of the government. It's been a progressing democracy for the last 12 years or so, and it's progressing quite wonderfully. The progressions here are amazing. The changes and how much. Human rights are growing as more part of the political culture here. This region in particular, again, I really have to stress it, it's not very representative of the rest of Indonesia. It's very, very conservative. It's what many people in Indonesia call the gateway to Islam. The conservatism in Aceh is more similar to countries in the Middle East, and it's not representative of the rest of Indonesia. In this area, Aceh is a very fascinating place. As I said before, it was the most hardly hit by the tsunami in 2004, and for about 30 years prior to that, there was a strong civil war, people in Indonesia fighting for independence from the Indonesian government so that they could have a lifestyle that was more based on Islamic law. After the tsunami, the government of Indonesia tried very hard to show them the respect, to give them a little bit more autonomy. And with this autonomy, they chose to enact more Islamic law and have a more conservative society, which is not as representative of the rest of Indonesia. And with this, there have been a number of issues that maybe many of your listeners would have issue with. I can give an example of a year and a half ago in Aceh, in one regency in Aceh, there was a situation where the police and local authorities came and rounded up many women who were wearing pants and brought them to an area where they had to exchange their pants for long skirts because, according to them, to paraphrase, pants were unbecoming of women and that they should wear skirts, which are more like what women should wear, pants are only for men. Mm-hmm. So there have been a number of things over the years that sort of show how conservative of an area it is, and I think this is the first time that the news has really gotten outside of Indonesia and reached the west of the sort of tactics that the government and the police and the military in that region are using in order to, I believe, control the populace and to protect the conservative political and conservative religious feelings of maybe the majority of people, and sort of hold back maybe the youth from rebelling or just from acting out in any way that they may want to.
Is it possible that, Aceh within Indonesia, which you describe as a very secular society that's come a long way, is it possible that this... the Aceh within Indonesia is kind of like the hillbilly Arkansas of America, kind of like not necessarily representative, or is that is there any kind of a analog?
I wouldn't necessarily completely agree with you the analog to that, but I could see where you're coming from with that. It is from many people that I've spoken to, many Indonesians I've spoken to, they see Aceh as kind of backwards and not progressing in the same way that they see the rest of the country progressing in. Indonesia and the Indonesians that I know, at least the friends that I have here, feel very strongly about it being a progressive country. Most of them are very devout Muslims, but they see it as a modern-day Islam and not sort of a medieval Islam. They feel very strongly about their religion, but they want to respect other people and having other beliefs. So I guess I could see how yeah, you could certainly make that analogy, and some people would certainly agree with that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. What about with the typhoon? I guess they call it there of 2004, and
tsunami.
Yeah. Tsunami. Yeah, the recovery from it. How has the economics of the country been reshaped, you know, with that with as a result of that shock and then the influx of capital in terms of the reparations and support?
Well, as a country as a whole, it had a very minor impact.
It's just that one
country,
area.
Indonesia, is a country of about 240 million, and this region that was hardest hit as a region of only a few million people. However, in this particular region, it is very very synonymous with Naomi Klein's shock doctrine. What's happened in other places in the world when they've had big disasters, and there's been a lot of international aid come in, and large companies have capitalized on this. I worked, when I first came to Indonesia, I worked for an organization called Peace Brigades International that had an office in Aceh. And while I never personally visited Aceh, I heard many stories about how the development there was going, how the development was almost always right along the main busy road from the airport into the city, so that any international donors that would come in would see the development. However, the bulk of the population was seeing very little of this money. Indonesia still suffers from very rampant corruption. So development company or development organizations that would come in and try to support the victims of this, they would have to pay large fees to corrupt police officials or government officials to actually be able to work in the province. So there was a lot of suffering from that. But as a country as a whole, it was a very small, it had a major impact on the country. But it was a very small region that didn't have very much economic input into the country, a generally quite poor area that didn't have too many resources and whatnot. It's a very good example of situations like Hurricane Katrina in the United States, where companies were capitalizing very heavily on the disaster.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're in the town of Bogor, was it?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
So, I guess you're going to be leaving pretty soon, or hoping to.
I'm not exactly sure. I'm in the country. I'm living with my partner right now, and we're just waiting on her permanent residence visa. We've been going through an almost 2-year-long process to get her back into Canada. After she lived in Canada for a while, it's been a very long, slow, delayed process.
Okay, so that's the delays related to, was it Indonesia? Does Indonesia and Canada have any kind of tension, or are we just looking at bureaucratic?
It's the embassy in Singapore.
I see.
That's the delays.
Well, we look forward to seeing you. Hopefully, you'll eventually overcome those obstacles and make it back, and then we could talk a little bit more about Indonesia or Manitoba politics, or whatever it is that you're inclined to talk about. So thanks a lot.
Definitely.
For sharing that.
Thank you very much, Michael. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, great stuff. Thanks, Kevin.
Take care.
And that's Kevin Friedman. He is speaking to us from Bogor, Indonesia.